Hello and welcome to the Semantic Cybersecurity Brief, our fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien and joining me today is Semantic Threat Researcher Bridget O'Gorman. In this week's podcast, we will be discussing some new developments around targeted ransomware attacks, how one man got 8 years in jail for his role in a financial fraud botnet, and also how a bumper fine has been issued by the UK Information Commissioner for a data breach. But first, let's turn to the topic that everyone is talking about this week, the US election. As we record this, we still don't know who the next president is going to be. And who knows, maybe when you're listening to it, you still won't know either. It's looking like it's going to be a real nail biter, which could go on for maybe even a day or two. And one of the talking points of the last election back in 2016 was cyber attacks and electoral interference. Unfortunately, this time around, at least as far as we know, there wasn't quite as much of it.
Yeah, so were there any attacks at all, Dick, or was it very quiet this year?
There was some malicious activity, all right. I guess the main thing that we saw was that social media companies like Facebook and Twitter are now an awful lot more wise to the disinformation campaigns that of the kind that we saw in 2016. And in the last couple of years, there's been a steady drip feed of announcements about disinformation networks being broken up and accounts being taken offline. So interestingly enough, one of the things I noticed was last time around was about Russian interference. There seemed to be a big Iranian component to attempts at interference at this election. So, for example, last week, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that's CISA for short, and the FBI, they issued a joint advisory on Iranian espionage actors targeting US state websites, including election websites, in order to obtain voter registration data. They said they scanned a number of election-related websites in 10 different states between September 20th and September 28th using the AccuNetix vulnerability scanner. And in one instance, the attackers even accessed voter registration data. And what there also seems to be a disinformation component to this. It's believed the same group was tied to an email campaign supporting the email disinformation campaign targeting Democratic voters in Florida and Alaska, claiming to come from the far-right fringe group who are known as the Proud Boys. And people were sent emails bearing the subject line, "Vote for Trump or else." They said that the Democratic voters should vote for Donald Trump or the Proud Boys would come after them.
Oh, wow. But, like, I mean, surely you wouldn't vote for Trump if you got an email like that. Surely that would have, like, the opposite effect.
And I think it illustrates that maybe the goal of these kinds of campaigns is much more about sowing confusion or getting people riled up. I mean, we saw with the Russian disinformation campaigns in 2016, where they were essentially trying to play both sides off one another by posting stuff in support of kind of, I suppose you could call it, the extreme ends of both camps. So it's less about trying to back the winner and more about kind of creating division and civic unrest. Hopefully it's going to be the last that we see of this stuff for a while.
Hopefully, it might be kind of wishful thinking, I'll have to say. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on from politics because I'd say everyone is sick of talking about it at this stage. I will talk about some other things, in particular ransomware, because I think there's been a lot of news about some of the bigger targeted ransomware gangs in the past week or so. So do you want to fill us in on what's been going on?
Yeah, so I suppose things kind of kicked off, I'd say, last Wednesday, really, when the FBI and the Departments of Homeland Security and the Health and Human Services, they issued this joint threat alert, basically warning about what they describe as an imminent increase in ransomware and other cyber attacks against US hospitals and healthcare providers, and which is obviously with COVID-19 is a big worry. And in the alert, they specifically warned about the TrickBot loader and about the Ryuk ransomware. And typically, TrickBot is used to deliver Ryuk as a payload onto victim machines, with Ryuk having been one of the most active, I suppose, targeted ransomware strains that we've seen over the last couple of years.
And TrickBot is something we were talking about 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? We were involved in a bit of a disruption action against them.
Yeah, we were. And it's possible that that may have influenced a bit of a change in tactics for the cyber criminals who were using TrickBot and using it to distribute Riot. Because according to both this alert and also to reports that have come out recently from other cybersecurity companies, a new backdoor and loader combination that has been dubbed Bizarre Backdoor and Bizarre Loader is being utilized by the criminals behind TrickBot now to deliver threats as well. So Bizarre has been observed since around the beginning of 2020, but its use does seem to have escalated recently. And this potentially could be driven by the recent disruptions that we've seen to TrickBot. And CISIS has said that it's now one of the most common for ransomware deployments at the moment. And researchers at another security company, Red Canary, they said that they observed recent attacks where the Bizarre tools delivered through a phishing email were then used for initial access, then followed by the deployment of Cobalt Strike, and later then the potential deployment of Ryuk. And Red Canary said that in the past month they've observed Bizarre loaders being used as a common initial access method for Ryuk, leading them to say that Bizarre is at the moment a greater threat than TrickBot for the eventual deployment of this ransomware. And Ryuk was also spotted in September by Sophos researchers as well, being delivered onto victim networks by a malware loader called Bjuer. B-U-E-R, not entirely sure how I should pronounce that. But
Neither am I.
But this loader first emerged in August 2019, and it's basically, you know, kind of another malware as a service offering that operates as a modular loader, providing initial access to target Windows machines. So like a lot of these loaders, it's capable of delivering all types of malware. And previously, it has been linked to delivering banking trojans and some other malware types, but now it does appear to have moved on to ransomware and seems to kind of potentially be setting itself up as something of an alternative to Emotet and TrickBot's offerings. So I suppose developments like this, they just go to show really that while disruptions of botnets like TrickBot that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago are very significant, you know, these cyber criminals, they are constantly retooling and adapting, I suppose, their operations. So while we may have thought that the threat from Riot would be decreasing at the moment because of TrickBot getting disrupted, you know, that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case. And it's definitely still a major threat. But thankfully, Symantec does protect its customers from Riot and its other associated threats. And we've actually been reviewing and updating our protection in the last week, you know, in light of this alert, just to ensure that we're protecting against all the most up-to-date versions of this threat. And there was a protection bulletin published on our security center with all the details of our protection there last week, if anyone just wants to double check that as well. But yeah, definitely a lot of action on the ransomware front in the last week or so.
Yeah, there certainly has been, because I think there's news about the Maze ransomware group, who we've talked a lot about this week, year.
Yeah, we definitely have talked about Maze a lot. So they announced this week that they were retiring, basically ceasing operations. So as you said, Dick, like Maze has been really one of the big targeted ransomware players in 2020. And it was really very significant because it was the first group that we saw steal data that it then threatened to sell, as well as encrypting systems as part of ransomware attacks. So we kind of pioneered this kind of tactic towards the end of 2019. And it was also one of the first groups to set up a data leak site to host this kind of stolen data. And these tactics, as we know, are now very widely used. They're widely adopted by other ransomware actors and are now like a very common feature of ransomware attacks in the last year. It's nearly more unusual to see a targeted ransomware attack where, you know, these kind of tactics haven't been deployed recently. But in a statement to the media this week, the Maze gang said that it was closing its operations and that any further use of its name would be a scam. So rumours that it was shutting down actually emerged last week, beeping computer reporting that the gang had actually stopped encrypting systems in September and that it was at the moment trying to kind of elicit its kind of payments from final victims. And also said it had cleaned up its data leak site, which sort of indicated that it was probably planning to do something like this. But interestingly, in its statement, Maze denied offering an affiliate program, which, you know, seems not very probably believable, because many threat researchers do think they have been operating an affiliate program for a long time. And it has been reported that many of Maze's alleged affiliates have now switched over to using a new ransomware called eGregor, which began operating in mid-September, just when it seems Maze was kind of planning this wind down. And this is believed to be the same underlying software as Maze, as it utilizes the same ransom notes, has similar kind of payment site naming, and also uses much of the same code. So it's quite likely, really, that the same actors are probably behind this ransomware as were behind Maze. So this kind of seems to be, you know, fairly typical of the kind of retirement announcements we see in the ransomware community. And similar, I suppose, to maybe what GangCrab did in 2019. They retired, but then they reemerged basically with some new key or the evil ransomware. So it's likely we're probably seeing the same kind of thing here. So while Maze is allegedly retiring, we can probably expect to see a lot more activity from this new eGreater ransomware going forward. And another point to note on this is that Maze has yet to confirm whether it will release master decryption keys to its victims, which typically is something that other ransomware gangs have done when they close up shop. So that would obviously be important for any victims. And speaking of Southern Okibi, I think you spotted something about
Yes, I did see something in the news this morning. I just read it before we recorded it. They've just announced they've, quote, acquired the K-Pot information stealing Trojan. That kind of sounds like a press release you get from a company. So, yeah, the source code for the malware was auctioned off on an underground forum after its developer decided to sell it off and move on to other projects. And the winner, and indeed the only bidder, was an individual using the handle UNKN, who is reportedly a well-known member of the Southern Okibi gang. And they paid $6,500 for the code.
Right, and why do you think they bought it?
Good question. K-Pot, anyway. Well, let's talk about K-Pot first. It's capable of stealing credentials from things like web browsers, instant messengers, email clients, VPN, RDP services, FTP apps, cryptocurrency wallets even. So why would they want that? Well, media reports have speculated that the gang could be buying it to develop it a little bit further. And it sort of ties in with their recent tactics where they have copied Maze by stealing victims' data from the victim's environment. So perhaps they're trying to kind of branch out a little bit here and steal more stuff before they start encryption. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good theory, because, you know, it definitely just seems that the stealing data is becoming a big part of these ransomware attacks now, and that they're finding it quite lucrative to do that.
Yeah. And of course, it could be just the case that it's some little side project on the part of this UNKN guy, but I guess it's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, let's move on from ransomware talk for a while at least, because a big fine was handed down this week by the UK's Information Commissioner.
Yeah, the Marriott Hotel Group was fined this week, was handed out a fine of $24 million, so about £20 million, I think, for violations of the EU's GDPR Act in relation to a massive data breach involving its Starwood guest reservation system. Now, this is a breach that has been well documented, I suppose, over the last couple of years. So the breach began with an attack against Starwood Hotels and Resorts in July 2014, when it wasn't even actually owned by Marriott. Starwood was then acquired by Marriott in 2016, but the breach wasn't actually discovered until 2018. So it was ongoing for quite a while. And it's estimated that approximately 339 million Starwood guests worldwide were affected by this breach, which is obviously a huge number, with the exposed data including things like names, mailing addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, passport numbers, and even in some cases encrypted payment card information. So quite a substantial data breach, I would say. And the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK said in the report that the attackers were able to install a web shell on the Marriott website and gain direct access then to a server, which allowed them to install a remote access Trojan that then they were able to maintain, you know, persistent remote access on the systems. And they then later deployed Mimikatz, open source software that's well known to steal passwords, and then also some memory scaping malware, which allowed them to steal the payment card details. So said that there were failures by Marriott to put appropriate technical or organizational measures in place to protect the personal data of its customers that was processed on its systems. So then it landed them with this fine of it's £18.5 million. So on $24 million US dollars. I was wrong in the exchange right there. So this was handed down this week by them, by the ICO. And it's actually the second largest privacy fine in British history, so it's pretty big. But it is actually significantly less than what was originally proposed. The originally proposed fine was nearly £100 million. It was £99.2 million, which is nearly $130 million. However, the ICO said that it can take a number of factors into account when deciding on the final amount. But it did say that it took the economic impact of COVID-19 on the hotel's business as one of the things that it did take into account before it decided on the final size of this penalty. But obviously it's still a pretty significant penalty. So it's just a kind of another warning to people out there that they need to take privacy and their customers' data very seriously, particularly if they're subject to the GDPR. And yeah, finally,
when I saw that, I was going, $24 million, that is a hell of a fine. And then when you see what they originally proposed fining them, it's startling. But I guess ability to pay, or maybe the fines are also relative to the person's size of business on COVID-19, it's probably had a huge impact on the hotel business, is one of the reasons why they cut it. But it's massive.
Yeah, I would presume that definitely would have an effect, because I guess, you know, the fine, they want to fine them and punish them, but they probably don't want to put them out of business either, I guess, you know.
That's true.
And I think, Dick, you want to talk about a man who was in court this week for being involved in a financial fraud botnet.
I did, yeah. I found this story quite interesting. So the facts of it are is that a Russian guy called Alexander Brovko was sentenced to 8 years in jail in the US for his role in operating a financial fraud botnet. Funnily enough, they didn't mention the name of the botnet in the media reports I read. But he was arrested in the Czech Republic last year, and he was extradited to the US to face charges. And he wasn't, it appears, the ringleader or the mastermind of the botnet, because he was found guilty of conspiring with another guy, Alexander Chertoklebov, who was jailed for 9 years in 2017 for operating the botnet, which was estimated to be about 500,000 infected computers. So while Chertoklebov was responsible for infecting all the PCs and whatnot, Brovko's role was to sift through all of the botnet logs and identify banking credentials that had been hoovered up by the malware. And then these credentials were then passed on to other members of the gang, who used them to steal millions of dollars from victims. But what I found interesting about the case was, given the proceeds of the fraud, which is millions, Brovko's services came fairly cheaply, and he was reportedly paid about $70,000 a year for doing what he did, which I know it isn't exactly the minimum wage, but it isn't a massive sum either. Wasn't really worth 8 years in jail.
If you're involved in a criminal enterprise, you need to be getting well paid for that, for the risks involved or whatever, you know.
I can do. Okay, let's wrap it up there, because I think that's all we have time for. But if you've been enjoying our podcast, don't forget to subscribe to avoid missing all of our future episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Threat Intel, or Medium at medium.com/threat-intel. If you'd like to read our latest research, check out our blog, which can be found at semantic-enterprise-blogs.security.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time, when we'll be once again looking at what's going on in the world of cybersecurity. But until then, thank you and goodbye.